From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of May 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. And then a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, will be here to help us look at the agricultural cash grain markets. Along the way today, we'll discuss what's been happening in Indianapolis with Scott Williamson, and we'll hear about his brand new driver there, Jean Alesi of Formula One fame. And as we close out our program today, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt, and Lisa Brault will be here too with some inspiration for you do-it-yourself gardeners. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgro on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. Nearby corn futures were down sharply, 25 cents lower today. We'll start there. 578.5 was the settlement price for the July, down 25. September at 518.25 on its settlement, 10.75 of a cent lower. In December at 515, down 8 cents. The March at 526.5, down 8. In the May, 534.75, down 7.75. July contract of 2013 at $5.42, down 8 cents. In December of 2013, a half higher at $5.25 a bushel. July soft red winter wheat, 2.5 cents lower, 663 the settlement. September down 1.5 at 678.25. And the hard red in Kansas City finished the July, the harvest month, at $6.87, up 0.5 cent. From the soy complex, nearby soybean futures, July contract, 13.5 cents higher, $13.76. The settlement price, August at $13.56.25, up 13.75. September soybeans, 13.13.25, up 18.25. November at 12.76.25, up 18.5 cents. January futures at 12.77.25, up 19.75 for the day. Bean meal, July at 410.80, up $5. July bean oil at 49.42, 51 cents higher. June live cattle at 117.87.5, up 7.5. August at 119.80, up 30 cents per 100 pounds. May feeders were down 2.5 at 152.40. The August at 158.85, 37.5 cents higher for the day. And June lean hogs at $84.20, down 22.5. July, 47.5 cents higher. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures trading 82 cents higher at $90.72 a barrel. Ethanol at $2.07.3 of a cent, down 6.2. Natural gas at $2.63.9, 9.8 lower for the day. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.82.1 of a cent, up 9.4 of a cent. And gold futures finished $9.20 higher. That's per ounce at $1,557.30. The U.S. dollar at 82.35, up 0.35, and the CRB at 281.92.48, higher for the afternoon. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says we'll have sunny skies. It'll be hot, a high near 90 degrees, with a breezy south wind at 25 to 28 miles an hour. It'll gust all the way to 39 this afternoon. Tonight, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, that coming before 1 a.m. Central Time. Partly cloudy then, a low of 63, breezy, a north-northwest wind at 21 to 24. So the winds will shift, but they'll stay high. Could gust as high as 31 this evening. Friday, tomorrow, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 85 degrees. On an east wind at around 7 miles an hour. And Friday night, partly cloudy and a low of 68. Saturday, sunny skies and 92 with a south-southwest wind at 9 to 11. Saturday night, mostly clear and a low of 72. Sunday, sunny and 93. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 72. And then on Memorial Day, a chance of showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly sunny, and a high near 92 degrees. Monday evening, a chance of showers and thunderstorms will continue. Should be mostly cloudy, a low of 68. And on Tuesday of next week, mostly sunny and 82 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 59. And Wednesday should show us sunny skies with a high near 75 degrees. A more complete look at the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour. You're listening to the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the phone line with us from CGB Enterprises, which is located in Mandeville, Louisiana, for his headquarters is Dan Zwicker. He's not there this afternoon, traveling again this week. Where are you today, Dan? Well, Dan, let's talk
Indiana
about...
Indiana area.
Oh, are you?
Ohio River Valley area, and of course I'm headed back to Decatur for the weekend because the moving van is coming Tuesday morning. So,
well, get her all packed up, and you move down there, and then we'll follow you down in August for our bus tour and see the CGB Enterprise. We're going to see the Mountain City River and Rail Terminal. That's at the very tip of the state of Illinois, there at the confluence, pretty close anyway, of the Ohio and the Mississippi Rivers. And then the export facility in...
Yeah, the Zeno Grain Corporation export facility in Convent, Louisiana. And we're looking forward to you guys coming on down and visiting us.
I think we're probably, I didn't check today, but approaching right at 30 folks on that 50-seat bus. So if folks want to get registered, they can do that on our website at willag.org, or you can call this number, 217-333-7300. That's 333-7300. Well, tell me about the marketplace for the day. Corn futures in the nearby spot really broke hard again.
Yeah, the big feature in corn today was the cheaper South American corn. South American corn is selling for about 50 cents cheaper than U.S. corn, so there was a lot of speculation that we may see some export demand shift to South America. So that was kind of the key feature, I guess, in the corn market with the old crop July basically collapsing in many cents, being down about 20 cents or so. But I think, you know, you have that, but you know, you still got to look at the strong basis levels that's happening domestically, and I think the it's mostly the domestic demand side of the equation that is using corn more so than export. So, you know, it's going to be still interesting to see as corn does cheapen up. I mean, that continues to keep people wanting to use corn more so than maybe switching to wheat, but there's no doubt that we're going to feed some wheat this summer. Harvest is going to be starting here probably another 10 days down here in this lower part of Illinois and Indiana. So, but that was the big feature today in corn.
As you look at the break in the corn market and you think about the domestic usage, and you suggested a bit of the livestock side of that on wheat feeding and possibility of switching back to corn maybe, that, and then the other part of that is the ethanol industry, which continues to grind. And if the price of corn drops, it should stay pretty stable, and the margin should be awfully good, I would think, for the ethanol producers. How tight might corn get, and do you expect it in the nearby to spike back up because of such a...
Well, I think the basis levels tell you that cash corn is real tight. You know, you don't have to go very far to find premium basis levels, and your processing plants are paying way above July futures. Actually, as July futures loses ground, the basis levels seem to get stronger. So, that tells you that there's going to be, it's going to be pretty skinny. I mean, everybody's hoping on an early harvest, but we want an early good harvest. And, I mean, if this weather pattern doesn't shift to something that has a little more moisture in it, you know, yeah, we're going to have early harvest, but it's going to be a short crop early harvest. And that's the last thing the U.S. agriculture needs at this point.
Have you been talking to many meteorologists about the next 2 to 3 weeks and what they're thinking?
Well, I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy, uses weather cycles, and it looks to me like we're going to struggle to get the moisture that we need. I mean, it's not going to be totally moisture-free. There's going to be some rains around, but I think the pattern is pretty well locked in place, which is going to be warmer and drier than average. But that's not going to be totally moisture free. But I think that's what we're into probably until we go into the summer solace, and then we'll be looking for maybe a weather pattern shift at that point in time. If you don't get one, then we're in for a pretty hot, dry type summer, I think.
Bean futures rallied 13.5 cents today. Why?
Well, beans is a little different on the export picture than corn. I mean, you can look at this morning's weekly export sales. We had very strong bean sales and wheat sales, whereas corn was lagging. There's a big export sales book on for soybeans for August, September, October. So there's commercial demand, end-user demand is going to be quite strong in the bean market to get their hands on the cash inventory. I think technically, I was looking at the July chart this morning, and basically the break that we have had in July beans has been like 38%, which at this point, this is coming off of that December Christmas low. That is a normal bull market type retracement correction. If beans can kind of make a stand in here, then we're going to see a good solid run up toward that high again, and we'll see where we go from there.
The near term high at the $15 or back to $16.50, or what? Which high are we talking
about?
Well,
we go back at that July high, and I don't have a chart in front of me to tell you exactly what that high was, but that would, if we kind of can kind of build and pull out of here at this 38% retracement level, technicians then are going to be looking for the market to go up and retest that high, either for a double top or if it goes through it, then that would be the official beginnings of a new leg to the upside.
All right. So on the continuous chart, that's about 1455.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah, that's July of 2011, right? Or you want to go further back?
July 2011. I was just looking at the July chart this morning when I was talking to Dave.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it had a 38% retracement.
Okay. Anything else we ought to take up while I've got you on the phone, or not?
No, that's pretty well it. I like I said, we're looking forward to having that bus tour come down to see us in late August. And I know there's a lot of CGB customers that are in the listening audience, and I'd encourage them to give you a call and get signed up and come on down. We're looking forward to you.
We've got a lot of room yet to spare, so people can sign up. It was actually a pretty quick sign up so far. We're really pleased with the number of folks that have signed up, and we will
kind of a business vacation package there, from gambling to the French Quarter to, I mean, that ought to be a fun trip.
Yeah, I thought about it a little bit when I put it together. That's what I had in mind, so it should be just a boatload of fun. It's the 20th to the 24th of August, a full week there, Monday to Friday. And on Wednesday, we'll be in Louisiana at Convent, and we'll see CGB's export facility. We're working on a couple of other things there as well. One of the things, and somebody asked this, so I want to be sure to clarify this, is that when we're at the CGB Enterprise, we're not only going to tour the facility, but we're going to learn a little bit about CGB and Zen Now, right? And we're going to have...
CGB is privately held by Zeno is one of the shareholders, and Zeno Grain is the one that owns the export facility there in Convent. So you're going to have both speakers, the operations guy that runs the Zeno export elevator there in Convent, will be speaking with you, and then Greg Beck, the vice president of CGB Grain Group, is going to also be there, and they're going to talk a little bit about the relationship and how they work together and whatnot. So it's going to be a real informative type information piece on how the corn and soybeans are exported into the world market.
Okay, thanks so much, and have a good flight back and pack up safely.
Okay, Todd.
All right, bye. That is Dan Zwicker. He is with CGB Enterprises. located in Mandeville, Louisiana. And, of course, we will be going down to see him in the month of August, and you can sign up for that trip if you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. There's a phone number there for you to call to the travel agency, but if you want to call here, you can do that and get the same kind of information at 333-7300, and the area code is 217.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com. Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois.
Up next, Lisa Braltz is here with her latest edition of In My Backyard. This week, some inspiration for the garden.
About 6 years ago, I was on a walk in the neighborhood when something caught my eye. It wasn't anything that would be exciting to most people. It was several panels of sturdy wooden fencing, about 3 feet high, that had recently been pulled up and were leaning against the house they'd once surrounded. The fencing was kind of old and had definitely seen better days. But every day for weeks, I'd walk by and look at that fencing with longing. I would visualize bringing it back to our house. Well, asking my husband to help me get it back to our house, where I would then transform it into something I'd been looking for but had been unable to find anywhere. A decent trellis for cucumbers. A few weeks later, the property owner said it was okay to haul the fence away, and it sits in my garden today as a trellis. That was BF, before Facebook. While I love the internet and social media as much as the next person, and probably even more, I do think sometimes that sites like Pinterest and Facebook and garden-heavy blogs end up being less about inspiration and more about intimidation. We become highly reliant on visuals to show us how to do things or how others think we should do things. Unfortunately, many of these images feature yard spaces or tools or structures that cost hundreds or even thousands of dollars to create, and the exact materials can be difficult to find even if you can afford them. This can be a major deterrent to someone just wanting to get started with a few tomato plants and maybe some peppers, and if they're really feeling crazy, some beans with a pole habit. It can also make those of us who have spent years scavenger gardening a little lazy. So let's quit looking at the internet for a spell and let's get creative. Get funky. Regard the stuff in your garage or your neighbor's garage with a new eye. Often the things you're looking at online or in catalogs aren't that well made and end up not being what you need anyway. Case in point, my friend and neighbor Christina has sweet peas in her garden. Sweet peas need support and hers were growing like gangbusters. But no matter where she looked, she was unable to find exactly what she wanted in terms of actual support and aesthetics.
So I had some chicken wire just kind of laying around like you do. And then I got some dowels and I had some other pieces of sticks and stuff. So I just put the two dowels up and then I have the chicken wire in between and then I put the other stick in the middle.
The end result, a trellis that cost a few dollars in materials, wasn't hard to make, and provides her sweet peas with the support they need. Also, it looks cool. This is not just advice for people new on the gardening scene. I got a late start gardening this year because my hose was broken. Yes, you heard me. I put off getting things in the ground because my hose was not functioning and I was too grumpy about it to consider planting my garden. Time went by and it felt like it was moving even faster due to the warm spring weather. Finally, my plans to just take the easy way out and buy some seeds and some plant starts and maybe even a new hose just gave way to a desire to look around my house and garden and garage and to figure it out. I'd worry about the hose later. I went through my collection of bamboo poles given to me by my neighbor Ed, who grows it. Some were in rough shape, but there were plenty there for growing lots of beans.
These are all flower seeds. Are years old, so
I went through the big box of seeds, and while I found a lot of seeds that were about 5 years old and probably not worth planting, I also found a lot of seeds for annual flowers and vegetables that were totally plantable. I had the tools I needed to get things started, and I realized that's what I've loved so much about coaxing food out of the ground over the years. It's not about what the compost bin looks like. It's about the compost. Beans and peas and tomatoes don't really care what the trellis is made from. They just want to grow. It was around this time that my husband figured out that repairing the hose would cost about $3. The garden is totally happening. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks go to Lisa Braltz and Dave Dickey for producing the In My Backyard segments. Now up next, the Indianapolis 500 is this weekend, and the University of Illinois has an alum as a co-owner of a car. There are lots of people that grow up in the Midwest loving the Indianapolis 500. They know exactly where Gasoline Alley is and cannot wait for the annual Memorial Day weekend race. Most years, Scott Williamson, a 1982 University of Illinois agricultural alum, watches the race from the stands. But that's not the case this season for the career AgriGold seed corn salesman. He has a new logo on his shirt this month.
We're in a Lotus, and there's a little, it's the weakest of the three engines, something we knew of when we got into this. You know, we have been given a power plant and a race car to go out and put John Alesi in the race and to do the best we can. And we've got a very experienced crew. They've been in a lot of 500s. They've been in a lot of IndyCar Series races. And we made the show. Nobody gave us a prayer to even be on the track 3 days after we got the tub. So they've really done Herculean things to get this thing done in a matter of days.
This year, three engine makers will be represented on the track at the Indy 500. The Lotus is underpowered by about 100 horses. Never mind that, says Scott Williamson. The driver of car number 64 is Jean Alesi of Formula One racing fame.
Yeah, before you know, because I'm new in the series and I'm listening everybody. Of course, it's true, when you're alone, you depend a lot from the power of the engine. For the race, it's going to be different. You need more the skill of being close to the car. The draft will help us to be together, and obviously the ability to stay on the track going to be an issue, very important. So now it's a part of my job to deliver and to make a good result.
We'll know the results this weekend. The Fan Force United racing team is hoping their Lotus-powered car will finish well. And while it's underpowered, they simply say it needs more cowbell and are asking fans to bring one and ring one during the race. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. And this is the closing market report. Let's check the cash grain markets now. On the phone line with us, Matt Bennett. He's a TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Tell me about the drop in the corn market and why you think it happened.
Well, I think today, whenever we came in and see the exports the way they were, there's no question there was going to be some pressure, I would assume. You know, exports are pretty rough on both old crop and new crop, yet bean exports were, you know, they weren't stellar, but they were certainly better, relatively speaking, than corn. And I just think, you know, guys were hoping for maybe a little better numbers, especially after seeing the nice ethanol numbers yesterday.
Did your bids get better today? By comparison, I suppose, in the basis?
Well, our base really didn't change much today. As far as the cash price goes, you know, dropping 25 cents, guys are pretty aggravated with that, I guess. But, you know, on the other hand, they've had several opportunities to sell above 650 even recently. So this corn market's been kind of a roller coaster.
Do you think there will be a bump in the futures market in the near term?
I do, depending on weather. You know, you don't have to talk to too awful many people around the Midwest to find out that there's a good deal of people that are really hurting for moisture at this point. And, you know, if the rains are disappointing here next week, I think you could see some major fireworks in the corn market.
Have you heard about early harvest happening anywhere? And do you think it will happen very soon?
Well, you know, it just depends. Are you talking wheat harvest or corn harvest?
No, corn harvest, probably.
Yeah. You know, I think that you'll probably see it a month earlier than normal just about everywhere, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that goes and see what the early yield reports are. You know, there's a lot of guys talking in certain parts south of here, double cropping beans behind corn if they can get, you know, corn picked by the end of July. So it's kind of a crazy notion, but I think it's definitely something that can happen, and so guys are going to try for it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
It's National Escargot Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1686, Daniel Gabriel Fahrenheit was born. He developed the Fahrenheit temperature scale and invented the mercury thermometer. Fahrenheit discovered, among other things, that water can remain liquid below its freezing point and that the boiling point of liquids varies with atmospheric pressure. In 1844, Samuel Morse transmitted the message, "What hath God wrought?" from the U.S. Supreme Court to the Montclair station of the B&O Railway Company, the first American telegraph line. By the way, the biblical text from Numbers was selected by Annie Ellsworth, teenage daughter of the Commissioner of U.S. Patents. In 1883, the Brooklyn Bridge opened. It took 14 years to build at a cost of $18 million and was the longest suspension bridge in the world at the time. In 1945, the first Food-O-Met was installed in a Grand Union Company store in New Jersey. And in 1964, Alan Hazelton died, an American electrical engineer. He invented the first circuit, which made commercial radio possible. By 1927, some 10 million receivers with his circuit were being used by listeners in the United States. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist on the phone line. Good afternoon to you, Pete. Let's start in the southern growing regions for corn and soybean production, so the Delta, and ask whether or not they will receive rainfall that would be beneficial to their corn crop.
Well, I'm afraid the chances are not good for the next week down in that part of the country. Most of the action will be much further north or further to the south and east across parts of Florida and the southeast. But when you get from the southern plains right on eastward through the Delta region into the balance of the central northern Gulf states, I don't see any appreciable rain falling right through the weekend. Temperatures will be above normal, and the dry weather will continue. There may be some episodes of just isolated thundershowers, but no organized system at all to produce any useful rain this week.
In those areas, how dry have they been?
Well, they've been getting quite dry. They're now running well behind normal as we get into the end of this month. It started out with some good showers early, but later on, the good moisture just shut off, and it's just been episodic as far as getting any subsequent rain. And it looks now like they're stuck under a ridge aloft with most of the action to their east, Florida, and the immediate coast.
Will there be a different story for the Midwest and the northern parts of the growing regions?
Well, a different story will be in the northern part. And once again, I-80 seems to be the boundary line between where we expect to see some pretty good rainfall on several occasions through this week, north of I-80. Good storm system coming through Minnesota, Iowa this afternoon. It'll fade this evening but redevelop tomorrow night and into Saturday. Get good storms. Most of this, now keep in mind, will be north of I-80, and that will move on eastward across Michigan and into northeastern Ohio. The front will come south, but will be running out of moisture as it comes south and produce a good day of post-frontal weather, which is cooler temperatures briefly on Friday, Saturday. Then the heat comes back north. We'll see temperatures in the mid to maybe even upper 90s from about, I-74 or so southward as we get into Sunday and Monday. And then another stronger front comes through Monday and Tuesday, but again, it just dies when it comes down through Illinois and into Missouri and the eastern Corn Belt. We'll get good rains to the north. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Iowa will do pretty well, but I'm not looking for much useful precipitation there, nor in the hard winter wheat belt, which is now struggling under some high temperatures and a total absence of rainfall when you get into the western, almost the western half of the hard winter wheat belt.
Pete, thanks so much for taking the time with us.
That's my pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on this Thursday afternoon. You can always hear him again if you'd like at our website. The address is willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.